How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Hey there, it's Locke. This show has no open or intro because it had a technical issue. So the Thursday's Facebook Live, it recorded fine on Facebook Live, but that's a little hollow because it's coming off that mic. It just didn't pick up on our regular system. So that's what I've done for you is replayed the Facebook Live. It'll be a little hollow. It is still brought to you by Shamrock Auto Group, and you can use the promo code LOJAZZ for three free meals on Blue Apron. Here it is.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 11th of May. Live, Facebook Live edition, the offseason. Your questions. I'll give the order chronologically of how things have to happen for the Jazz and what the preferences are, and then get your thoughts and your comments and your questions as we do it. A Thursday, live edition. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA Insider. Today's show is brought to you by Shamrock Auto Group, as well as Blue Apron. In fact, the wife's going out of town this weekend, so what am I going to do? I'm going to use Blue Apron to cook my son dinner. Let's hope. Let's hope I can handle this. I'm the only one in the family who is not entirely Blue Aproned. All right, few notes. I got some thoughts from people yesterday on whether they wanted the, if we do the 60 dB thing as part of Lockdown Jazz, whether they want the beginning or the end. Most people are saying end. I'm not quite sure how this can work. I think 60 dB is an interesting company. If you haven't, if you want to check it out, go for it. And then I'd love it, actually, if you checked out 60 dB audio with it, if it didn't take you away from Locked On Jazz, and gave me an idea of what you thought of it and what your feeling is on them as a product and whether you like it. I'd love a little sample from you guys. We're partnered with them with the Locked On Podcast Network. And you can download the apps. They're all in beta. They're very raw. But I'd be curious your thoughts on that. Boy, this is just not good. Something ain't right in the system today, which is not good because I have a podcast scheduled at 9 as well. Anyway, I don't think we're doing that today. I'm going to just jump right in today's and give you kind of the order of the way I think things have to happen for the Jazz this offseason, as well as what I think is going to be necessary, you know, the order of preferences of how this all is going to play out. This summer. So that's the plan. I want to take your questions on what you think and how it all how it's going to happen. So that's the goal of today's show. Today's show is brought to you by the Shamrock Auto Group. If you are looking to buy a nearly new or used car, this is a neat company. Rob Taylor started Shamrock Auto Group out in Pleasant Grove and has really done a nice job building up what has been a fabulous customer service-based car experience. They're going to give you out-the-door pricing in 5 minutes, test drive by yourself, a buying experience for under an hour, full-service can-do financing in-house and extended warranties, value-driven, and a Carfax at every report. Reliable sedans, most of the cars are 6 to 12 months old, 5 to 20,000 miles, Suburbans, Yukons, big SUVs, minivans, and then also, and if you go check out the Google reviews, here's Amy Miller from a year ago. Fantastic place to buy a car. No beat bad salesman. He was great, totally friendly, no pressure, knowledgeable. Helped us with a trade in our truck too. Great value. We live in Southern Nevada, and I would so go there again. And this is common. People coming from outside the country, outside the state. Evan Bingham says, I'm such a tightwad, I would have told you it was impossible for me to write a good review, especially on a car company. I hate spending money, or at least I want to get my money's worth. That's exactly what I got from Shamrock. A great car, great price, great people that took the car to our family. I've already sent my neighbor to Shamrock. He was looking for a truck. We'll continue to send people there. I'm not the kind of person that writes reviews, but I've got nothing but good things to say about Shamrock. They're awesome. So if you're considering buying a car or a truck, you know someone is, give Shamrock a call. Call Rob directly, 801-319-2250. That's 801-319-2250, Shamrock Auto Group. out in Pleasant Grove. You can check him out right off the 203 North 2000 West, which is North Utah County Boulevard. All right, let's get to it. Here's the priority of things that I think have to happen in the Jazz offseason. Obviously, draft preparation is going to start now. They're all there. I actually think the first thing that has to be done for this organization is to try to figure out why no one could get healthy. And I don't think they're going to discover that something's dramatically wrong or that somebody's incompetent or anything like that. But if you're going to follow the mantra that Dennis Lindsay has had this entire time with the franchise of who he is and what he believes in and all of those aspects of things, then I think you've got to really believe and follow the mantra that he's looking at every data point, the way he did the officiating, on his own crew. Rodney Hood couldn't get healthy. Derek Favors couldn't get healthy. Alec Burks couldn't get healthy. George Hill couldn't get healthy. Might be the reality of an NBA season. Might truly just be the reality of an NBA season. But needs to be looked at and analyzed. That's the first thing. The same way that Quinn Snyder last year, at this point, went through every late-game circumstance to figure out what was wrong with the team in late game. I think the same thing has to be done by Dennis on the medical staff to figure out, and what did Quinn find out? It wasn't as bad as we thought. A lot of times we were trailing going into those circumstances. We weren't defensive rebounding well. That's probably the first thing he had to fix. He did that. And I think Dennis is going to find the same thing. He's got a quality staff. He's got good rehab people. He's got good strength and conditioning people. Maybe we're going to find out that in the future you got to rest them more before they come back. I don't know the answers. It's not my field. But I do think from the season standpoint, that's probably the first thing the Jazz have to look at as an organization is why were guys unable to get healthy? And maybe you're going to find out Derek's just not going to ever be there. Maybe Alex's injury was so significant it's not going to be there. Rodney's knee, is what it is. Like, that could be the answer, too. George Hill's toe is going to be a career issue for him. Whatever the answers might be doesn't mean that there's something, doesn't mean the fact that they're, in that sense, if that makes sense, I think that that's, you don't have to find something wrong when you look into it, is I guess my point. But you got to analyze at least what's happened in that regard. So that's the first priority. The second thing, the Jazz still have a bunch of cap room. And I think that's the first thing that you're going to have to look at is what the Jazz can do with their cap room. And that cap room expires on July 1st. So as of right now, the Jazz are still $13.9 million under the cap. Boris Diaw's contract next year expires at $7 million this year. So you could trade a pick and Boris Diaw, or a player and Boris Diaw, and take back 13, well, in the case of Boris Diaw, you could take, so if you add our cap room, you could bring back as much as $20 million of a salary. Okay? So, I think, at least in my analysis, that's an important move to be made prior to Gordon Hayward signing. That move right there is the move that you have to make before you sit down across the table from Gordon Hayward. And that might preclude you from re-signing George Hill. The secure route is to try that first. That you go to see if you can find that. Now, that's not an easy question of who. Where's Miami in their process? What are they willing to do? Portland is interesting. They've got a salary cap problem. They have $137 million on the books next year. Alan Crabb at $18 million does not move my meter. Evan Turner at $17 million does not move my meter. I doubt we're getting Damian Lillard for that kind of package I just talked about. CJ McCollum is at $23 million next year. I doubt they're moving CJ McCollum for $23 million, but that's a lot of money for And I don't know if I believe C.J. McCollum is a point guard. But these, you know, that's a team that's got a little bit of a financial problem going on. And that's what you got to try to figure out. Miami's got a bunch of cap space next year. They only have, as of right now for Miami, they only have, well, they have $93 million on the books next year because the Chris Bosh is $25 million. That clears. If they're trying to make a play, and maybe they're willing to move Goran Dragic, and they think they can go get Kyle Lowry and make a trade, make some big moves. Frankly, you know, I don't know what their answer is of what they're trying to do, but is Goran Dragic available at $17 million this next year, $18 the next year? I think that'd be a really, really nice answer for the Utah Jazz. Minnesota, Ricky Rubio's always talked about there. Minnesota is only at $73 million next year. Rubio's their highest contract at $14 million. They're stuck with Pekovic's $11 million. I don't think we could take that on as well because we're going to have financial issues. They've got Cole Aldridge at $7 million. They might want to move. I don't know if we're willing to take that on, but we probably could if we had to get Ricky Rubio as a point guard. These are some of the first kind of spots that I would run down. Toronto is in a really interesting position where they make this comment about cultural change for next season. And, you know, what does that mean? They have DeMar DeRozan at 27. They have Valanciunas at 15. They have Damari Carroll at 14. They have Corey Joseph at $7 million with a player option. Next year, he'll probably opt out of that. If they're re-signing Lowry, they cannot afford to have a $7 million backup point guard. And do you believe Corey Joseph is good enough to lead the way for them? Denver has all sorts of things they want to do, but Gallinari will play a player option, and then they open up, and I don't think they have a guard unless Jameer Nelson's $4 million, but I don't think that moves the meter for them. So you have to kind of just look around and see if there's a place there where the Jazz can do something similar to what they did a year ago, which is prior to the draft, make a move. Now, that deal wasn't finalized until afterwards, but I think that's, you know, how that deal played out. Milwaukee's got a little bit of a salary struggle, by the way. They're at $110 million on the books for next year already. Greg Monroe opts out. They get a little bit better. I don't know if they think that Matthew Dellavedova was the right move for $9 million, but I know the Jazz have always liked Matthew Dellavedova. Do you go acquire Dellavedova? And I don't know if you really think he's a starting point guard in the NBA, but that would be a possibility. Now you have at least some security in that regard. So those are some of the – that's the kind of first-level type of deal that I think you're looking at if you're the Jazz trying to figure something out right out of the chute, use the cap room, relieve somebody else of their salary cap burden in that time period and find a player that kind of matches what we want to do. You know, I'm not a huge fan of this guy. $21 million is a lot for him, but Victor Oladipo, Oklahoma City's got a little bit of a financial issue going on at $110 million. Oladipo's on the books for 4 years for $21 million. It seems like a lot to me. But in our system, do you just decide you're playing without a traditional point guard and you're just going to have a bunch of different guys play? Maybe. So that's another name I would throw out there. So that's the then priority three for the Utah Jazz is either at the trade deadline or somewhere in the process. The Jazz need to find a way to clear some guys off their number, and I don't know how they can do it. So Alec Burks is 10.5 and $11 million for 18-19 is a tough number when we're going to be really salary strapped. So that's one I would look at. What are you doing with Derek Favors, $12 million next year? I actually think he's a backup center. That's great, but he's probably not that happy about it. So that's an interesting number to play around with. Both Rodney Hood and Dante Exum become available for extensions moving into the next season in the 18-19 season. So you probably got to figure out right now whether you're willing to pay those guys. That's probably something you've got to figure out already. And then obviously you've got to try to re-sign Gordon. So if you re-sign Gordon at $30.9 million, which is probably the number unless he becomes a designated player exception, you're at $104 million already. If you get rid of Boris, you're down at $96 million. You're under the cap. The reason you probably you might want to function over the cap a little bit, which you would function over the cap still with that. So I think, you know, if you move Boris at 7.5, or let's say you hold on, if you re-sign Gordon, you're $3 million under the cap, $16 million under the luxury tax. So you don't have a huge amount of movement here. It's why I keep saying that Joel Ballenboy and some of these guys are really going to need to play they're going to need to play and have an impact. Trey Lyles, Dante Exum, Joel Ballenboy are likely going to have to be rotation players next year. But here's the trick, by the way, of what I just talked about. If you don't make that move in the order that I laid it out, you go sign Gordon Hayward at $30.9 million. You only have six, unless you've gotten rid of Boris, which I think, you know, you just don't pick up his option. So we can take that number off. You have $24 million to sign George Hill under the luxury tax and not fill out any other roster spots. You'd have a draft pick that takes some. So you do have about $20 million that you can go get George Hill with as your own free agent, but you don't have $20 million to go sign some other free agent. So let me see if I can make this clear. If you don't go make that move for your point guard prior to free agency, and then you re-sign Gordon at his $30.9 million, you now have the bird rights to George Hill and about $24 million under the luxury tax. There's some other numbers here. These are all abouts. But you don't have the ability to go sign Kyle Lowry for $24 million or Drew Holiday for $24 million or Chris Paul for $24 million because you don't have, you're not under the cap. Does that make sense? So that's a pretty important concept in all of this. I don't think my regular recording is working at all because I can look at the seconds and realize they're not ticking off correctly. Well, maybe they are. Let's hope. All right, so that's kind of the big thing there. And it just with this, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 players under contract. Your draft pick is 11. Your second round draft pick is 12. Then whomever your point guard is 13. I don't know. Joe Ingles. And by the way, none of that number I just played around there had Joe Ingles involved. None of that had Joe Ingles. The only way you're re-signing Joe Ingles, which I think we'll do because he's, is you've got to find a way to move an Alec Burks' contract. I don't think you can have $11 million for Alec Burks and $11 million for Joe Ingles at the same time, unless you don't have a point guard. So that seems different. That seems difficult. Again, if you take Boris's contract down at 7.5, you've either traded you're $24 million under the luxury tax if you've re-signed Gordon. You can go get your point guard. It's probably going to, re-sign George Hill at that point, probably 18. You don't have to stay on the luxury tax. You don't have a Joe Ingles contract at that point. So we'll see how that plays. If you can move Alec or move Derek, you then have Joe Ingles. If you move Alec and you move Derek, either one, or let's just say you move Derek, what's your front court rotation? Right? It's Rudy Gobert, probably with a minimum center, which might be Jeff Withey. I mean, once you're paying Rudy $21 million, you're not paying a lot for the next guy. I mean, if you just think about the luxury taxes, the salary cap's 101, the luxury tax is 120. You got five positions at $25 million. You're over the luxury tax. So you've got five positions that you've got to allocate somehow how you think they're important between 20 and 30. Gordon's taking 30. Rudy's taking 21. Your point guard's probably taking 20. Now, you don't have a lot of space in those other numbers. If Joe's taking 11 or 12, we'll see. All right, so that's kind of the allocation. I think I laid it out. That's kind of tomorrow's show. I'll get into it a little bit more. Let's get to your questions here on Facebook Live, which is our 50th Facebook Live. Would you have enough cap space to bring in a guy like Paul George or Kyle Lowry this offseason if we could convince them to come? Not re-signing Gordon, you don't. If you don't re-sign Gordon, you don't re-sign George Hill, you don't re-sign, you opt out of Boris Diaw, you have $34 million under the cap, is the way I count it. But now, why is anyone coming? All right, sorry, this was our little private show that we had going. Just wondering what your thoughts are on Coach of the Year. How does Miami's coach get Coach of the Year and not even make the playoffs and Quinn doesn't? Well, that was a... because Miami's roster wasn't very good. They were like 10-31 and then won like 20 straight. So, I mean, Spoelstra had a pretty good year. Just because your guy doesn't win Coach of the Year doesn't mean people don't think he's a great coach. People are high on Quinn Snyder. Sorry, still looking for questions. Everyone is down on Dante. I feel like he's going to be great in this league. Do you have some sort of stats or something to solidify my feelings and also rely on your analytics? I don't have any analytics that say Dante is going to be great. I probably have the opposite, unfortunately, at this point in his career. But I think that you have to understand that he's never had a basketball offseason yet. And since he's never had a basketball offseason, I don't think we know who he's going to be. His 2-point percentage went up from 41% to 51% this year, which I think is a really, really good sign. He actually went to the free throw line some. His rebounding went up despite playing more minutes or less minutes. His steal rate and block rate aren't great, but they're at least something. His 3-point shooting went down, though he continues to work on that. I just am going to reserve any opinion on Dante either way until he gets a basketball offseason. Post All-Star break is kind of, I said you shouldn't judge him until post All-Star break, and I thought we saw post All-Star break the flashes of why he was the number 5 pick in the draft and what made us all excited about him. I thought we saw that in that time period. His 3-point shooting went from 27% to 34% post All-Star break, which is a really good sign. His 2-point shooting dropped a little bit, which is all right. His usage rate, his true shooting percentage were all kind of the same. So I thought post All-Star break was a much better player than we saw pre All-Star break. Still had stretches, still is having a hard time at point guard, you know, running the offense and doing what he's supposed to. I think he got in his own head a little bit in April. But I think with an offseason here, I'd be pretty excited about Dante. I think Dante's got a role in this team next year. I mean, you may decide that Dante, Exum, Rodney Hood, and your point guard, hopefully George Hill, are your three... that's a threesome that carries all those minutes with Gordon Hayward. And then if you can get Joe Ingles back, that's great. If not, it's AB in that spot. And if it's not, you know, so if you could probably go into the season with the five wings of Gordon, of your point guard, hopefully George, or somebody you've acquired, and also, by the way, go get Dragic Rubio or one of those guys. It's less money than what we're talking about. Increases... You know, if you're suddenly able to get Rubio at $14 million and Joe Ingles suddenly comes back at $8 million, now you actually have a chance to get that done, right? And now you may decide that you're going into, so it's point guard, Rodney, Gordon, Dante, Joe Ingles. Those are your five guys to play those positions. And then if we have injuries next year the same way, we're in trouble. Because we're not going to have the $10 million depth guys that we had last year. Matt, I still cannot introduce you to Joe Ingles. Can you cover for Softy tonight on KJR? Softy's too good for me to cover for him, but love the KJR reference. Hello, CJ. If George Hill leaves, what are your thoughts on going after Rubio? So that's a name I threw out there. I love Ricky Rubio and his plus-minus and what he does for the Jazz. or what he's done for Minnesota. His lack of shooting is troublesome. He's a career 31% three-point shooter. He sees the court brilliantly. 9 assists a game would be changed a little bit of how we play. I thought the LaVine injury meant he got better in the second half of the season, which means he plays with the ball in his hands more. It's not entirely how we play. We move the ball around a little bit, and his floor spacing could be difficult. Post All-Star break this year, he averaged 16 points, 5 rebounds, and 11 assists. He was unbelievable. Shot 35% from 3 when he had it's because LaVine got hurt and he had the ball in his hands. His usage rate went way up. His plus-minus has always been brilliant. I like Ricky Rubio. There are flaws to his game. I think he might be a little bit that kind of player that when you have him with you every day, you see his flaws more glaringly than you do when you just look at him. But I like Rubio. I'll tell you, here's one that I would just throw out there that I think is an interesting concept. I don't like it that much. Never mind. I'll hold back on that one. I don't like talking about trading our players under contract either. I got to be honest with you. But, you know, he's a draft pick. I don't know if they're dumping. I think you're going to have to give up a player to get Rubio. And they need a shooting guard with Zach LaVine to soften Zach LaVine's return. They also have to have decided that they're going to Chris Dunn. And Chris Dunn did not have a very good year. So, you know, the Rubio thing may be a lot of talk about something they're not necessarily willing to do. They need Chris Dunn to play for their salary structure a little bit. They have Karl Anthony Towns about to get paid a year from now in the 18-19 season. They have Andrew Wiggins about to get paid. Well, I guess Karl Anthony Towns get paid in the 19-20 season. Andrew Wiggins get paid the 18-19 season. So they really don't need to move Rubio's contract until a year from now. They've already played Gorgui Dieng, $14 million. Zach LaVine's also got to get paid coming up here. So they have, you know, they do have a money issue, but it's really not going to hit them for another year. So they need Chris Dunn to play. So the question is, do they feel they have to develop? Chris Dunn shot 29% from the field and 38%. 29 from 3 and 38%. He was not good this year. And he's 22 years old, so that's a worrisome thing for them. Are the health issues related to our style of play? We play so grindy and defensive-oriented. Maybe teams that play more in transition aren't injured. I think it's a legitimate question. I think, you know, I go back to the opposite, which was when I was a kid and they talked about Don Nelson and that team was playing 3 or 5 possessions more than everyone else in the league. And in turn, it was, and in turn, what was happening was that they were getting injured because of the fact that their players were running more than anyone else. Or are players running more in some way because of the fact that they are doing more cuts and all those kind of things? I don't know the answer to that. It's an interesting question, I think. I was trying to see if I could find speed and distance. So distance miles traveled for the season. Zach LaVine was leading. C.J. McCollum, Karl Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, Jimmy Butler, Harrison Barnes, Steph Curry, Rudy Gobert, Russell Westbrook, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Klay Thompson, Otto Porter, Nicholas Batum, Kemba, Damian Lillard, Bradley Beal. So we're not, you know, Gordon's in there now at 174 miles, same as LeBron. During the playoffs, he was running an awful lot, though, I will tell you that. I don't know if our offensive number, we run more on offense than defense or anything like that, but it's worth, you know, it's worth keeping an eye on. But I don't, you know, I like our system, I don't know, but it's a fair question. Any outside chance we could sign CP3? Seems pretty unlikely. If you sign Gordon, you cannot sign a free agent point guard other than George Hill, would be the way I would look at it. That's the best way I can analyze it for you. Howell seems to make better progress offensively, but it seems like he's too far undersized. Do you think he's worth trading for a guy like Rubio? Well, yeah, but Minnesota's... Howell's not worth trading because he's... earns $1 million next year, and if he's your backup point guard or your third point guard at $1 million, he's fabulous value. So I'd be really surprised if we traded Howell. What is my gut feeling on Gordon? I don't have one. I go both ways. I just think it's a hard call. Middleton over Hood. Yeah, Milwaukee's not doing that. I think Hayward is leaving, which means Hill is gone, so then what happens? Then we have, as I said, if Gordon's gone, then you have $34 million of cap space to try to rebuild the team with Rudy Gobert and see if you can find a player that wants to come. And you better hope that Dante and Rodney Hood develop pretty quickly because there's going to be a lot of burden on them. I don't know why you see, this is interesting. I don't know why. I don't have a feeling on it. I don't have a feeling he's staying. I can tell you why he's staying. I guess I can tell you why he's leaving. But I don't really have that feeling one way or the other. I think he's a free agent. He gets to look around. I think our team's more attractive to other players right now than it's ever been with Dennis, Quinn, the culture they've built, and the fact that Trevor Booker, George Hill, and Joe Johnson have all come and enjoyed it. Is it crazy to think it would be smart to chase a trade for Paul George? Is he locked to going to L.A. if he's moved? Yeah, I think there's no sign. And I think he showed he was a terrible teammate this year. But, I mean, I think if you think he can go get it done, I don't know how you're getting that done, quite honestly. So you're going to trade Paul George for 1 year of Paul George, and you're not willing to give up Rudy or Gordon, I'm assuming. What are you doing? What's your $19 million of salary? I mean, they're not going to just take Boris Deep. They're not dumping him. Derek Favors and Alec Burks aren't getting that deal done. So you're including Rodney, Dante. So you're going to offer Rodney, Dante, your first-round pick, and the cap space prior to January, prior to free agency. You think they would make that deal? You think they would trade for Dante Exum, Rodney Hood, and our first-round pick at 24, whatever it is in the draft, for Paul George? They were, like, offered the world by Detroit and turned it down. You think they're willing to make that deal? You don't think they could get C.J. McCollum for Portland for Paul George? Like, you think that's the best deal they can get? Remember, you got to be the best deal they can get. So if they trade Boris for, say, a power forward, is it for sure George Hill is gone? No. If you fill up your cap space, you better re-sign George Hill. You can play with getting a point guard. If you re-sign Gordon, you cannot go sign a free agent point guard. It's going to be very difficult to sign a free agent point guard somewhere else, unless you're doing a sign and trade and play around. It's going to be difficult. It can be done. It's difficult. But with the cap space prior to July 1st, you could go acquire a point guard with about $20 million of room that we have along the way. Someone just said that Boris has zero value. No, Boris is an expiring contract that doesn't cost a cent next year because it's a player option, so he has great value. Move Derek Favors. He's not happening anymore. Sucked during the playoffs. Had a couple of good games, but that's all. Right. He's injured. He was a pretty good team player. He's only making $12 million next year. But, sure, move him. And I don't think his value is very high right now. But you may have to clear some space. What other things in the max contract is negotiated? I don't think a lot. That contract gets pretty simple with Gordon. What are the chances we could lure another star to play with Gordon and Rudy? Maybe not this offseason, but within two or three seasons through trade or free agency. I mean, there's a chance. The luxury tax and the cap are not moving a great deal in the next year. And Dante's number and Rodney's number are coming up in 2018-19. They're going to both jump to different numbers of salary, which get difficult. Best time to trade for another Stars players before July 1. Yes. I think the chance of getting another Stars players can be tough. Like, I don't know who you're thinking of, but there aren't that many out there, and I don't know that we have the pieces to ask, you know. Derek's not at the high peak of his trade value. Rodney's probably, but you're going to have to pay him in a year. Joe Johnson's not a high trade value guy, and we probably need him. Trey Lyles, I'm not sure we're willing to trade him. He's still got a huge amount of development. He's only $2 million. Are you willing to move Dante? Can Joe Ingles' restricted free agency contract help our cap hold for signing our free agents? Does he need to sign an offer sheet with another team for that to work? I don't understand the question. You may know the cap better than I do. I love favors, but what point do we determine he's simply injury prone and can't be a consistent part of the team? Well, the bigger question is what time point do other teams decide that, and then you can't move him. What is your ideal situation for who we retain and he and who leaves? I think the ideal situation is you make a move before July 1 for a point guard. You have to say goodbye to George at that point, but it just gives you the security of talking to Gordon with him knowing what the roster is going to be. You re-sign Gordon. Now, depending on which point guard you've just acquired, you might have a little bit more space, so you're able to re-sign Joe. You are able to shed some sort of contract, and you can fill in the gaps nicely otherwise. But Joe, you're going to have to watch. That one's not going to be easy. All right, about two more minutes. If Dante can improve his game at the rim, can he be a weapon on the pick and roll with a stretch four or five? I think Dante can be really good. We just got to let him go. Any chance of getting Millsap? My heart wants it, but not sure if it makes sense. Well, he's getting old and injured, so that's the first question you have to ask yourself of how much you're willing to pay Paul. So that's the first question. Atlanta, Paul's $20 million last year. So the way I've seen this, I see very little chance of getting, you know, if you've re-signed Gordon, you don't, once you've re-signed Gordon, unless, yeah, once you've re-signed Gordon at $30 million, you have Rudy on the books for $21 million, there's just not cap space for a $20 million player. Unless they're going to take Derek Favors and Alec Burks in a sign-and-trade, but why would they do that? If you can move Derek Favors and Alec Burks, you can get to about $16 million of cap space. But you can't bring anything back. One thing to remember about Rod this year is that his knee hyperextension was a fluke thing, stepped on a guy's foot on a fast break. Yep. Do you think you can explain to the Jazz fans why, if we don't retain Hill, we don't have the cap space to replace him? Please seem to think that if we don't pay him $25 million, we'll have $25 million to spend in the open market. So I think I've done a decent job of that today. But with George Hill, you have what's called his bird right, so you can exceed the cap to sign him. But if you don't have his bird rights, if you don't have Chris Paul, Jrue Holiday, or Kyle Lowry, you can't. You have to have cap space to sign him. Once we've re-signed Gordon, we don't have that cap space. Any chance of Hayward is gone that we build around Rudy, Lyles, Hood, include Exum in that, in the draft? Yeah, there's a chance. Is the only return we get for trading Boris or Favors just salary relief? Is that the only value they have on the market? Favors, I think, might have some value. I can see a scenario where, this is me dreaming because I love this player, but there might be a possibility that Denver doesn't re-sign Gallinari. How would this work? So Gallinari is a free agent. We could sign Gallinari in a sign and trade, send Derek Favors and I don't know what the date on Boris is. I'd have to figure that out. And Boris to Gallinari, we bring back his contract. They decide Favors compliments Jokic better, but they have Fareed at 12 or 13 million, so I don't know if that works. I don't know. I'm making stuff up. Derek might be able to be in a sign and trade if you're trying to move him. Will it be able to unload AB for some cap space or trading him now? Impossible. I think that's a hard one. He hasn't played in 2 years. How much faith should we have in Lindsay having a great plan? He's proven nothing else at this point. He's been fabulous. Has Gordon Hayward put the whole team on hold? No, probably not. And that's not his fault. Any chance of getting Lowry? No. In 2 years, do you see us ahead of the T-Wolves with Karl Anthony Towns and Wiggins? Tough call. They're going to be really good. Do you foresee any potential coming out of the upcoming draft that may solve our back? No, I don't believe young players help you win. If we don't have coffee shops, we'll be in trouble without Boris. Yes, very much so. I feel Ibaka would be a great fit along with Rudy as a potential with our team high enough to try and grab him. It's interesting. This hasn't been great recently. He'll be a free agent. Toronto's got money issues. Again, though, we go back to this. Once we've re-signed Gordon, I have us with $4 million under the cap, which isn't enough to sign players, and we'll actually be functioning over the cap because we would keep Shelvin Max rights at that point. Jeff Withey probably resides, and he's got a cap hold. So you'd function over the cap, which means your best thing you can do is the mid-level player exception. And I think Ibaka gets more than that. All right, that is today's edition of Locked on Jazz. I think Facebook only, because I think I had technical problems here. Thank you very much for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed the show. We'll have another one for you tomorrow. Today's show brought to you by Shamrock Auto Group as well as Blue Apron. Use the promo code LOJAZZ to get 3 free meals at Blue Apron.